From the St. Louis Sports Commission studios, the hosts of the 2025 NCAA Frozen Four and ACHA National Championships, this is College Hockey Coast to Coast. Brought to you by the NCHC and NCHC.TV. Subscribe to NCHC.TV for all of the action from the best conference in college hockey. University of Georgia, building the foundations of something bigger. Go to UGAHockey.com to find out how you can be a part of it on and off the ice. Jets Pizza, we're not just pizza. Sidekick salads and calzones at JetsPizza.com. Adrian College, championship aspirations on the ice and in the classroom. For more information, go to AdrianBulldogs.com/MHockeyD1. Caesars Entertainment Resorts and Casinos, from coast to coast and beyond, wherever you need to be, Caesars has a destination that suits your style. Central Oklahoma University Hockey. Go to UCOHockey.com to follow the two-time ACHA national champions as they look to add that third championship banner to the rafters. The Spaghetti Shack. ASU alumni owned and operated at thespaghettishack.com. University of Mary. For tickets and schedule information, visit goumary.com. The Caesars Sportsbook app, where every play earns you Caesars rewards towards dining, tickets, VIP experiences, and more. But please, play responsibly. Jesse Ray's Barbecue in Las Vegas, award-winning barbecue for your next catered event at jesseraysbarbecue.com. College Hockey Coast to Coast from the St. Louis Sports Commission Studios is a part of the IceTimeHockeyWest.com network. Here are your hosts, Scott Strandy and Paul Hornstein.
Indeed it is. College Hockey Coast to Coast, the Frozen Four special episode. Scott Strandy joining you tonight from about 24 miles to the east of where I was last night. Not Bloomington, Minnesota, but Lake Elmo, Minnesota. What a day. What a day it's been. My co-host, as always, joining me from the big, beautiful, palatial estate and the command center now. For Ice Time Hockey West, somehow on Long Island, New York, Paul Hornstein. We're also joined by our special correspondent this weekend. We're making Nick work really hard. Nick, we want to make you a full-time guy. That's our goal. We love what you bring. But Nick Maxson joining us from St. Cloud, Apple Valley, wherever he may be. He's going to be at the XL Energy Center with me and bringing you all the action of what I think will be the best Frozen Four in a long time. So, Paul, how are you? How are things in the command center?
Well, first of all, we know who has the real command center, and I have the pictures to prove it.
Not anymore.
Nope, yes, I do.
I moved.
Well, I'm sure it's
24 miles to the east.
I'm sure it's a traveling command center, because that's what usually happens.
No, it's not that.
This was probably, let's just say that... this day was a little weird.
Do you have keys to your car?
I have an extra set. Was an extra set, if that makes any sense.
What's this stuff about planting keys to see if they'll grow at a nursery?
It's a good question. It's a very good question. I wish I had as equally as good an answer.
Anyway, how's life on the island at the command center? Day off today for you? I don't know.
Yeah, day off. Yeah. Getting ready to have to put four new tires on my car, getting ready to have to get all of that nonsense done. Yeah. Okay.
Just checking. Anyway, Nick, how was your day today? Because, I'm guessing you're looking forward to seeing the hockey that I saw today.
Busy day, especially if you're, an NHL fan.
Really?
No,
what happened in the NHL?
Yeah, what's going on there?
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of speculation, guys, about what's happening around. A lot of he said, a lot of she said. The Coyotes' fate pretty much signed, sealed, delivered, I think, with everything that was announced today. But like you said, Scott, yep, getting ready to enjoy some college hockey. And I definitely agree with you that this Frozen Four is going to be up there to being one of the better ones we've seen.
Nick, let me tell you, today I went to the practices and the press conferences, and I went in with a very open mind, and I said, you know what? I really think that these four teams really want a national championship. They really do. I still believe that the teams do. But I saw a mass media today, Nick, as you probably can imagine, at a Frozen Four, and the pressure squarely from the media has been placed on the two Boston schools. The first press conference is Boston University. There must have been 36 to 40 media people in there. Then Denver came up. I think there were five of us. Then Michigan came up, and I think there was maybe 14, 18. And then BC came up, and surprising as this can be, BC only had, I don't know, a dozen people in a press conference. Greg Brown even commented about this might be the shortest press conference ever. To tell you how desperate they were, Nick, they asked me to give some questions. So you know
that should tell you everything, right? You need to know.
Anyway, so here's what, and I'm going to start this off and let you guys run with it from there. Here's what I determined today. I saw John Buchegras doing an interview with Cutter Gauthier, and it wasn't about anything to do with the Frozen Four. It was about, hey, Troy Terry's wearing number 19 in Anaheim. What number are you going to choose, and why would you choose it? Are you going to try to buy it off of Troy Terry? How's it going to work? And I'm going like, whoa. Can we let the kid get to Sunday first? That was just my gut feeling. I don't like it. I don't like it a bit. And I know the national media has their job to do, but goodness gracious, this is about college hockey, guys. Can we just wait until the season's over with and then get into those types of questions? Nick, your thoughts?
You know, it's... I'm with you on this one. It's kind of funny, and he, meaning Gauthier, has attracted a lot of attention throughout this college hockey season, especially with, shall we say, some other NHL-related tidbits, we'll put it that way. But I do think, yeah, I mean, I'm not sure if he stayed around for the whole interview. I would hope that there were some college hockey-related questions from the national media, but... Yeah, you're putting the cart before the horse, right? I mean, we know Gauthier is going to be an NHL star. We know that he's going to have an opportunity to really compete and get top line minutes from the guys in Anaheim. But you still have a job to do. You still have, you know, an opportunity for you to.
Fidget, Nick, fidget.
It's funny. I was fidgeting and it still went out. This is what happens when you have an Android phone, apparently. So anyway.
Fidget. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, the funny thing was the screen was up. So something else is going on. Anyway, but focus on the now, right? Yeah, like you said, I mean, you have opportunities to ask those questions later, but maybe they don't, right? Maybe the national media, this is their one time that they invest the money to talk to these players. So maybe they're trying to do, you know, three or four birds with one stone, who knows, but yeah, kind of disappointing that there's not more conversation about, you know, what's up ahead of them in terms of a couple of days or now hours merely to what might determine where he goes after this and more his immediate future.
Well, you know, again, and I've said this before, and Nick, I don't know if you heard it, because I think we even talked about it. Do a little bit of research, please. I mean, we already know that the place in Connecticut does a lot of Hockey East and is tangentially involved to the ECAC, especially the Ivy League schools. But can we please just, I mean, again, you're there to do games with other than specific players.
Yeah.
Talk to them a little bit, please. Just a little.
This is the frustrating part for me, is that, and Paul and I talked about this, Nick, off the air today. when you're playing a college hockey series, it's a two-game series. When you play two games, maybe you can have an off period or whatever. But the focus today from almost every team was, we can't take any time off. We have to be ready to go from the start. And teams say that all the time, but this is it. This is one and done. They all talked about it. You're going to play start to finish for 60 minutes. If you take any time off, take a stupid penalty, do whatever with any of these four teams, it's going to cost you. So this was this is what was going through my head when I was hearing these various questions asked. And they would be asked like this. We're talking about what's going on in your future. Try to block that out for now. But, you know, what do you think? What's going to happen? And it's like, come on, man, you're just throwing stuff out there that teams are going to hear. And maybe guys do wander a little bit. What if they fall down a goal or two as they start thinking about, oh, boy, this might be the end. There's 54 minutes to play. This might be the end. We're down 2-0. I mean, I don't know. I'm just saying that it seems like it's a distraction that is not affecting Michigan and not affecting Denver.
Yeah, and, you know, for it, especially for some of the national media who have been one of the few voices that has talked about college hockey, right? It's kind of ironic that the questions that you'd be asking have nothing to do with the game that you're promoting, right? It's interesting. Now, to that degree, I also understand that, like you mentioned, you know, national media has a job to do, and you know, and I know they're trying to maybe get some different tidbits here and there, and who knows if they actually use any of the interviews that they have on live air or wherever it goes, but. Yeah, I mean, and maybe it was a safer bet for them because we know Gauthier is a higher, you know, high level pick. He's going to be an NHL forward, so maybe that's the storyline is how this is the final year of the final weekend of college hockey, and there's, as we talked about, how many first round picks or NHL draft picks that are going to be on display this weekend, and how many of them could sign pro deals after this, and maybe that's the angle they're taking. But like you said, you know, there's a job to do ahead of them, and you know, you just hope that the focus for the players, and I would think it is on, you know, the task at hand and not looking past to what decisions that some are poised to make regarding their hockey futures when all is said and done, whether it's tomorrow or whether it's Saturday.
And again, you know, Nick, that, you know, you'll ask a million questions when you're getting ready to do a game, and maybe you use the answers to two or three of them in a game. But if I'm a coach in my team, I'd be really cranky that most of your questions are coming, well, what are you going to do next week when you sign with, or what do you think your number is going to be like, and you know, all the NHL related questions. Hey, can we let my guys focus on this week before we worry about next week?
Paul, that's a great point. And let me throw out a little piece, and I'll let Nick respond to that. Greg Brown today was named the Coach of the Year, the National Coach of the Year. And to Brian Smith's credit, the host, MC, whatever, he said, Coach, when you start off with your opening statement, can you also comment about your thoughts on winning Coach of the Year? And Greg was visibly uncomfortable. And he said, you know, it's about these guys to my right. He had three players up there with him. He said, it's what they do. It's not about me. And he said, somebody gives me an award, I really don't want to talk about it. Yet everybody kept going like, can you give us a comment? what's going on? So it's not just the talk of his players and other and BU particularly, but there's a lot of great players on Denver's roster and also on Michigan's roster. And to me, this is how I felt. I felt like they got overlooked today. I really do.
You know, and that's okay. Right, Scott? Because I think
it is for those two schools because they both won at number 10 this weekend.
Yeah, and at the end of it, right, in a weird sense, because we've talked about it on the flip side, right, Scott and Paul, where when you're getting all the national media attention, when you have, you know, the expectations that you are the best team and, you know, this is your tournament to lose per se, right? It's almost better as a player or as an organization, I think, to be the one that gets overlooked because you can kind of tune out the noise a little bit. You know, the noise isn't as loud. And it allows you, regardless of the one-on-one interviews with national media, local media, anybody in between, right? It just allows you to sort of keep that white noise, at least that's how I would describe it, as much to a minimum as possible. So it's tough, right? And the thing is that, you know, when you've got all this NHL talent that's going to be on the ice in St. Paul this weekend, you know, these kids for a lot of their junior careers, some in high school and then into college here, you know, they're the ones that have been the guy, right? They've had the noise surrounding them. So I'm not sure it really affects the players as much. But when you get to this setting, and we've talked about the youth of Boston College, right, how immensely talented they are. But the big question for them, at least for me, is they're a young team. And that, you know, does the lack of experience matter to them? It might. Because, you know, when you go through, you know, flying in and, you know, you're doing one-on-one sit-down interviews and you're being asked these rhetorical questions about now and then in the future, right? It's a lot to digest and it takes away the focus of what you got to do in your upcoming game, right? So at the end of it, sorry, I'm halfway losing my voice here in a second. I apologize, but it is, right? But at the end of it, guys, I get the sense that if I'm Michigan, if I'm Denver, hockey to me, and maybe it's just because when I played, you know, being a pipsqueak, essentially, I could skate like a bat out of hell, but that's about all I could do. At the end of it, it gave you a chip on your shoulder to kind of prove it wrong. And I felt that that was easier to play that way than it was to play with a 1,000-pound boulder, as you would say, Scott, on your back, trying to just essentially keep the expectations exactly where they were. So I'm the Vandals. Absolutely. I love being the underdog. I love being overlooked. Let me go out and prove it with.
Well, here's the weird thing, right? When you look, it's such it's a weird thing to say when you look at guys on the BC roster, guys like Cutter Gauthier and Ryan Leonard and Gabe Perreault and Will Smith and Jacob Fowler. These guys all played in the World Juniors and big giant tournaments, but yet no Frozen Four. So it's a weird juxtaposition. In terms of when you use the word inexperienced, because is the pressure the same in the Frozen Four as it is in the World Juniors? No. Does that mean it's any less? No, it's just different pressure. Because you're now trying to win something else where it is kind of more personal because you are with these guys far more than you are with those guys, say, in the World Juniors.
Yeah, so, World Juniors is 3 weeks tops.
Well, there's a couple of weeks during the summer where you're practicing, right?
Yeah, combined about a total of 3 weeks.
So, you know, this is more personal. And I think that's what makes this different.
Glad you brought that up because BU was asked today, is it better for your team? Do you feel more together like a family because you have three sets of brothers? And they kind of thought it did. I mean, Jay Pandolfo kind of thought, you know what, maybe that is something to that we've got a whole brother, like, some of the players said that everybody on the team was their brother. They could say that, but some of them actually were their brothers. It's weird. But I guess the point that I'm getting at is that outside noise is outside noise. Some people can block it out, some can't. I'm just saying that one mistake, two mistakes might seal your fate in this Frozen Four particularly because of the competition that you're playing. There's no secret that there's 48 NHL draft picks playing in this tournament. There is outstanding goaltending. There's outstanding special teams play. And it could be a 6-5 game, or it could be a 2-1 game. It could go either way. And trust me, all four of these teams know that defense wins championships. And I asked the question today, is it hard? Is it hard to juggle really good offensive talent and still get them to buy in to play defense? And the coaches kind of said, yeah, you know, well, this time of year we know you have to have buy-in on the defensive end, responsibility all over the ice if you're going to win.
I mean, you know, again, it's part DNA, right, Nick? I mean, no matter how good you are offensively, right? Your defensive instincts are just not there if you haven't really been pressured into playing any.
I'm not sure I would use the word pressure, but to give you guys kind of a personal story, one of my nicknames when I was playing hockey was Meeks, same for Mikko Koivu. And if you want to draw your own conclusions with that and how skillful I was, you may do so at your own expense. But what it meant was...
I thought it meant you were blonde-haired and blue-eyed.
Far from that. So opposite end of that spectrum. But to me, it was always, at least for my coaches, it was always stressed that... I don't care if you can score 50 goals. If you're going to get scored on 50 times, to me, that does me no good. And at least for me, and this is just me personally as a player, like I got just as much joy about breaking up a play, about, you know, battling I played center, battling down low, helping out my defense and thwarting a cycle, or, you know, being in the right position to tie up a stick. You know, and what it comes down to, Scott and Paul, to me, is will. It's willingness at this level, right? And at this late in the season, because coaches can tell you where to be, they can draw structure up, but you have to be willing to go and, you know, kind of rub shoulders to take a couple of chops and to give it right back. And, you know, sometimes there's a little bit of lip reading that would go, you know, unannounced. But at the end of it, you got to be willing to do those things, right? And if you're not willing, for example, like Macklin Celebrini, right? One of the things that when you read his scouting notes is complete 200-foot player and endless compete. It's those types of intangibles, besides an Austin Matthews shot or a Cale Makar type skating, that gets you further at the higher levels of the game. And it's that type of attitude that the players are going to have to take into these next couple of games in order to raise that trophy. Because Scott's right. I mean, one mistake, one bad penalty, and sometimes even in junior hockey, when I call these games, I'm in the coaches' meetings, I talk about it being a game of inches. And they showed film. It was maybe a stick blade length here, a skate blade length there, where a pass gets through the seam and you end up getting scored on, or the puck is 6 inches too far of the your intended target stick, and so what would have been a 2-on-1 rush the other way is thwarted because of a bad pass, right? It's those details that matter here, and it's the team that can execute those details and more so limit their mistakes is the one that's going to have the best time here.
What a segue. Let me tell you what I heard today from Jay Pandolfo. Somebody asked him a more in-depth question about Macklin Celebrini, and he said not only is he a fierce competitor, and he said ultra talented, but he said when he came on the campus, he said, I'll take you back to the first day of training camp, paraphrasing here a little bit, but he said when he came onto the campus as a 17-year-old, he, in Jay's words, he pissed some players off. because he said the first couple of weeks he just wouldn't quit. And they were going like, hey, who is this kid? And who does he think he is? We're older. We've been around here a little while. And he's just, and Jay said he didn't do it in an intentful, harmful way to aggravate his teammates. He did it because that's the only way he knows how to play. And he said after about a week of training camp, the guy said, okay, well, I guess we better join him because we can't beat him. And he's not going to change his ways. So that was some interesting comments, because I've heard all the things that you've heard, Paul and Nick, about how good he is and this and that. And I watched him play two games on purpose because I want to see my own eyes on him. And boy, when you're 17 and you come in and push around everybody on your college team your first couple of days on campus, that's gutsy.
Well, and he stands out, right? I mean, on a team full of top-notch players. Now, they aren't all number one picks like they have on BC, but there's still a ton of draft picks. And when you watch a BU game, it's hard not to notice both Celebrini and Lane Hutson, because if one doesn't have the puck, the other does. And it's not that the other guys on that team are not any good. It's just you just watch those guys and you're like, holy smokes, these guys are just so much better. And I don't know if you've had a chance to see BU at all, Nick. Hutson's a little bit of a different. You probably got to see Owen Power.
Yep.
Nick, and he was a different kind of player. He was a much bigger, much more physical kind of defenseman. Whereas Hutson just always has the pucks, just always seems to be on a stick. And it's hard to get it away from him, even at 5'10", 160 pounds.
Yeah, so I've seen BU limitedly, but I will tell you this. That's a fast hockey team, number one. And if they're trying to remake the 2022 Colorado Avalanche, they're pretty close to it just because that team plays with a lot of speed. My goodness, you're right about Hutson. He's a guy that you think the puck had pine tar on it. It just doesn't want to leave his stick. It really doesn't. And the way that he drives the play up the ice when he activates in the offensive zone, it's almost like everybody around him, if you're on the opponent's side of the puck, just gets immediately puck watching just because of what he can do and how fast he can do it, right? Yeah. So when you put that together, you know, the skill and the speed, that's a dangerous mix. And then you add in the hockey IQ to it. I mean, Jay Pandolfo, if there's one thing I've been reading about BU, is they're a team that they manage the game very, very well, right? So, yeah, because you see teams or maybe players who've got the raw skill, they can skate well, and maybe don't think the game the one or two steps ahead that's necessary, so it's almost reckless speed, right? Yeah. This is a BU team that doesn't do that. They know exactly, they're intentional with what they do. Again, they play a very sound game as a unit on the ice, and rarely do they shoot themselves in the foot, and that is a very dangerous combination to go up against, because just as much as they don't make mistakes, they surely take advantage of their opponents almost every chance that they get. So I cannot wait to watch them for a full 60, but I am, shall we say, anticipating what I'm going to see, and that's going to be exciting for me to see it.
Nick, let me tell you about their opponents tonight, because first and foremost, David Carl announced that Massimo Rizzo is fully healthy and will be in the lineup. I saw a little bit of that when I was in Denver. I saw him go down the hallway to the weight room, and I'm going like, hey, he looks pretty good. So I wasn't surprised to hear that. But David said he had a great week of practice, actually started skating with the team before the Springfield Regional. So Massimo Rizzo is back. There was also talk today about Sean Behrens and his effect. And it was interesting, Paul, that you said 5'10" for Lane Hudson, and David Carl said sub-6 Sean Behrens. He said, you know, it's hard to be a really good, solid physical defenseman when you're sub-6. I thought that was a great line. I'm going to use that forever, by the way.
Of course you will.
But he said, Sean Behrens has proven that he can handle, and he brought up the reference of playing with Kyle Mahieu and how important that was in Sean's development. So when you look at the lineup at Denver, they're maybe right now they're not as flashy as BU, but I think they're more sound. I think they are deeper, more sound. And I wanted to hold this for a little while later into the show, but I think I had a chance to visit with Matt Davis. And Paul, you know my affection for Matt.
It's
been a 3-year deal. I just think that the development of Matt Davis has been so big. And as I look at the four goaltenders, they're all good. But I think there is a clear difference between Jacob Fowler, who's clearly the number one, Matt Davis, who's clearly the number two, and the other two. And I don't mean to dislike.
I'm not trying to slight him.
Yeah, I'm not trying to slight him. I'm just saying that when you hear these two names, those two names are ones that could very well be battling it out on Saturday night for that national championship trophy. So let me take a quick second here to play this clip. It's about 3 minutes from Matt Davis in the locker room today. Here we go.
Got Matt Davis with me here just before the Frozen Four. Matt, just your thoughts on getting through Springfield and getting here and what it means again.
Yeah, I mean, it was an awesome regional for us. I mean, we had to win in different ways than we've been used to. And yeah, I mean, the guys battled hard, and here we are, and I'm just super excited to be here.
Tell me what it's like, because you've been around this program for a while now. You waited your time behind Magnus. You learned from Magnus. You learned from Ryan Massa. How do you feel right now?
I feel great. Yeah, I feel confident and just ready to go help us win our 10th national championship.
Coach talked a little bit about what it was like for you and getting the opportunity when Magnus went down a couple of years ago and you had to take the role for a little while. How much confidence did that build for you?
Yeah, I mean, that was great. I mean, of course, the circumstances weren't ideal, but that was awesome for me to just play a couple full weekends back to back and just get my feet under, get those games under my belt and a couple weekends under my belt and just kind of know what it's like to be a starting goaltender in college hockey, because it had been a couple years since I'd play back-to-back nights or weekends in a row, and like how to manage practice throughout the week. So it was good for me.
Describe what it's like to go from a high scoring team like this and then all of a sudden you get in the regionals and you have 2-2-1 games and one's in double overtime. Is the mindset different for you at that point, or is it just DU hockey and it is what it is?
Yeah, I mean, it is what it is. You just kind of, you just do what you can. And those games, we got a lot of opportunities, but ran into some pretty good goalies. And, you know, that happens. So you just got to be ready to win, whether it's 7-2 or 2-1 or 1-0.
The mentality for you in a one-and-done scenario, at NCHC hockey has been that way since you got here. One and done, though, it truly means one misplay, one whatever, and it's over with. How do you do that as a goaltender? How do you compartmentalize that?
Just breathe. I mean, that's all I've been doing is just breathing and trying to keep my heart rate down and just remember that as long as I take care of my details, the score is going to take care of itself.
All right, back here at the XL, you guys won a Frozen Faceoff Championship a couple, 3 weeks ago, whatever it was. It didn't seem like you guys were as ecstatic about that trophy, although it means a lot. Now you're playing for the really big one. How much has changed?
Yeah, I mean, not much has changed. It's just the fact that we knew what our goal was from day one of training camp in the summer going into the year. Like, whatever it is, every year our goal is to win a national championship. And, of course, the Frozen Faceoff is a... That was a big deal. I mean, it felt good to lift that trophy. I know the program hasn't done it in a couple of years, so it was that was great for us. But our goal has been set on winning the 10th ever
Matt,
since.
Appreciate your time. Good luck on Thursday.
Thank you very much.
Okay, guys, your thoughts on Matt Davis and what I had a chance to visit with Paul. Go ahead.
Well, it's always about that in every sentence, winning the 10th, winning the 10th, winning the 10th, winning the 10th. It's like it's just like a tape loop. If you know, you remember what tape is or know what tape is.
No, that's way before my time.
Yeah, I know, but winning number 10, winning number 10. Right? It's like that's what we talk about from day one. We don't have nothing else. So
yep.
That's what you notice, because that's the mantra. And you know, all the goalies are out there on the island, right? Because when they make, they might not even make the mistake that costs their team a chance to win a championship. It might be somebody else's mistake, but who gets blamed for it? It's like the quarterback in football, right? Everybody blames the quarterback too much, and everybody praises the quarterback too much. You know, I would say that it's, you know, that that a goalie is the same way, right? Yeah, too much credit totally when they win, not enough, and too much blame when they lose.
Yeah.
Especially where something can be fluky.
Yeah.
You know, what are you going to do? I mean, how many times have you seen a puck go in that hit two or three guys on the way to the net? Not even forget one.
Yeah.
Two or three guys on the way to the net. What's a goalie supposed to do about that?
What if the puck hits an official and goes in your net?
Well, apparently, yeah. Well, yeah.
Nick, your thoughts?
Yeah, there's been the discussion about 10, but as a goaltender, right, a lot of what you base your, shall we say, outlook is how you play, right? And I think for Matt Davis, who I think has looked really, really good this year, I think he understands, too, that, you know, when you're excited to win the NCHC Frozen Faceoff, as you alluded to, Scott, but also know, hey, you know, we've got bigger fish to fry. You know, we have a bigger goal that we want to reach. It's nice to know how mentally sound this group is, right? And I think as a goaltender, right, and I think Scott and you and Paul could attest to this, having a goaltender that can kind of get into the game, that can make a couple of saves, and they don't have to be great A's, but you know, can just get settled in and feel comfortable. I get the sense with Matt, and just watching him over the course of the NCHC regular season and then watching the Frozen Faceoff and highlights, he looked incredibly poised. He looked incredibly comfortable. Again, a lot of that has to do with the team in front of him, but I think there's a very quiet confidence with this goaltender. And I think they're embracing the fact that, hey, we don't have to, you know, we don't have to do anything different to get to raising number 10. We just have to continue to do what we do best, play to our identity, and if we do that, we'll be fine, right? So I like his mentality. I love his approach, and I do think he's going to be one of the people we talk about at the end of this tournament that, shall we say, might be a difference maker.
Well, and I think, and you guys can disagree with me if you wish, and most people do most of the time. I think his profile, so to speak, Matt Davis's profile, was raised to another level in that double overtime game against UMass. And especially after he cramped up and nobody knew quite what was wrong, and he stayed in the game. You know, we didn't know at the time as we're watching that he was cramping up. You know, and that break probably took about 6 or 7 minutes. And you could kind of feel the Denver fans kind of holding their breath. Right? Because he had played so well in that game. Forget about the fact that, you know, you'd have to bring a goalie in cold, because that's happened all the time. Right, you've seen goalies come in cold, and you know,
I've seen Julie the Cat Gaffney come and face Gunnar Stahl very cold.
Yeah, I'm sure that reference went right over my
Mighty Ducks reference, D2.
Oh, well, that's why it went over my head, because
I was waiting to find out how long that was going to take.
But that's not a movie we normally reference on this program, but go for it, dude. I shouldn't be the only one with movie references.
Not tonight.
Not well. Anyway, and it's not that Halaka didn't come in and played well in spots. And sometimes those goalies come in cold and steal the show. But you could just kind of feel the Denver people holding their breath during that moment in the double overtime game. And when he stayed on the ice and made that first save after that break, you could also feel like, you know, he's now reached a different level in people's eyes. You could actually feel that through the screen. Now, maybe I was the only one.
Nope, you were not. You were not. I've heard that several times. Here's what we'll do. Since we wrapped up the first game, we'll talk about the second game. So we'll take a quick break. We'll come back, and we'll talk about game two of the semifinals of the Frozen Four, which will be Boston College and Michigan. We'll be right back.
It's time to drop the puck on the nation's best college hockey conference. We bring you closer to the action all season long with access to exclusive on-demand content and more than 140 live games. Catch every big goal and clutch save. When you can't be there, we have you covered here. Stream on your phone, computer, or straight to your TV, and don't miss a moment from your favorite team. Subscribe now to watch the best in college hockey at NCHC.TV. If it's NCHC hockey, it's on NCHC.TV.
The St. Louis Sports Commission invites you to become part of the legacy of the Heartland of Hockey as they and the city of St. Louis host 2025 NCAA Frozen Four and ACHA National Championships. From the Stanley Cup to college champions to an exploding youth hockey community, St. Louis hockey has a long storied tradition. Find out how you can be a part of it by visiting us at www.stlsports.org. The St. Louis Sports Commission, making St. Louis a better place to live, visit, work, or play through sports.
Passion, talent, development. NCAA hockey offers all that, and its players graduate at a 93% rate. Trevor Zegras.
And they score on the lacrosse move!
Jake Gensel.
Banks it towards the goalie, score!
Kale McCarr.
He scores!
Stars on campus before the NHL stage. Whether you're a fan or a player, nothing compares to college hockey.
My goodness gracious!
CollegeHockeyInc.com and follow at College Hockey.
After a hard day at work or a long week, what's better than good comfort food to put you at ease? At the Spaghetti Shack, we say the answer is comfort food that's made by somebody else. The Spaghetti Shack has taken spaghetti and meatballs, the classic Italian comfort food, to a portable level. ASU alumni owned and operated, the Spaghetti Shack has three locations at 6340 South Rural Road in Tempe, the ASU location at 922 East Apache Road, and 952 West White Mountain Road in Pine Top. For lunch, dinner, or catering as well, call us at 480-687-2485 or order online at thespaghettishack.com. From the St. Louis Sports Commission Studios, hosts of the 2025 NCAA Frozen Four and ACHA National Championships, this is College Hockey Coast to Coast.
Indeed it is, a very special edition of College Hockey Coast to Coast. It's the practice review and the preview for the Frozen Four, which starts tomorrow in St. Paul, Minnesota at the XL Energy Center. Scott Strandy with you in Lake Elmo, Minnesota. My co-host, as always, from the big, beautiful, palatial estate on Long Island, New York, which we now call the Command Center, which I understand might be getting some yard work done, some gardening, flowers, things like that. And Nick Maxson joining us. Okay, guys, we talked about the first game, potential. Now we got a second game, Michigan and BC. On paper, this one doesn't look as close as I think it's going to be. I think one mistake, again, is going to be the telling story of this one. And that's crazy because when you think BC could score a million with their talent, and they have scored nearly a million across the board. But, guys, your thoughts on game two? Paul, go ahead.
Well, I know you – I know Nick probably isn't old enough, but Scott, you know, how many times in, have you heard over the years that in the late 80s Oilers would score 6 or 7 goals in a game, and those guys will be like, yeah, but if it wasn't for Grant Fuhr, that might not have been enough.
Yeah.
And that's what you might see in this second game. You know, sometimes when a goal gets scored, it's not a mistake by the goalie. Sometimes you got to tip your cap to the guy shoot the puck. And I just kind of get a feeling that this game, for no particular reason, I can't sit here and be like, well, this is what I see is going to happen. I just kind of get the feeling in this game, it's going to be the key play is going to be made by somebody we don't expect. I don't know why I feel that way.
You might be right.
I couldn't sit here and tell you that this is why or that's why. It's just an itch that I get when I'm trying to figure out who's going to win this game. Not that I try to make predictions. But
oh, yeah, you do. No, fair enough, though.
No.
Nick, your thoughts on Michigan, Boston College. Well, what do you expect from this one?
I'm torn on this game, guys, because you got everybody in this room knows how similar both these teams are in terms of how they want to move the puck up the ice quick. They want to play in the offensive zone. They have the speed. They like to push the pace. And they both like to outscore their opponent, as Paul would say, which means it's going to be a 1-0 game here in St. Paul. That's just the way this goes, right?
Of course.
But to a degree, right, when you're in this situation, it's one and done. You're in a national semifinal game. I do wonder, and I don't know if it's going to be what we call a mistake, Scott or Paul, but I more wonder how the mistake's going to be made. I really feel like the area between the two blue lines is going to really determine how this matchup goes. Whoever can slow down their opponent, whoever can take away time and space, not allow the teams to, shall we say, have chances off the rush. I really feel like whoever's more stalwarty defensively, especially in the neutral zone, is going to have the advantage in this matchup. And I think both teams are going to make an effort to really slow each other down. So I do think you're going to see a lot of dump and chase. I think you're going to see a lot of these teams utilize the cycle play. And then especially when they do get something established, you're going to see these defensemen on both sides be very, very active, especially on the weak side. So with that being said, goaltenders in this matchup are going to have to be very, very aware of where the puck is not necessarily also where it is, because both these teams like to spread out the ice. They love to forecheck as a 5-man unit, and both teams can transition incredibly fast. So, So it's not that I don't think it's going to come down to a mistake, but who can force the other team to get off their game first? I'm curious, Scott, if you see it the same way I do. I think, again, these are very talented squads. I think they are very similarly built. I think they play a very similar style. And to me, that's going to be the Achilles heel for either squad is in the neutral zone. What do you?
Yeah, I think you're spot on. And this is kind of a cop-out, but I watched both of these teams. Well, I got to see Michigan in Maryland Heights, so I got a feel for them. Watched them again practice today. But today I watched Boston College practice very closely because that's the first time that I've seen them up close and personal. They do a unique practice set. This the only team that I saw today use a third of the ice and go crosswise, and they move the puck incredibly well. But the cop out is, I think Jacob Fowler is the difference maker in this one. He's probably been that way, what, 31 times this year in wins? But this one is coming down to Jacob Fowler, because I agree with you, Nick. I think to play in the middle of the ice is going to be very difficult to possess pucks and enter the zone that way. Dump and chase is going to have to be the way it's played. But Jacob Fowler, and I watched him today over and over and over again for the better part of an hour, and that kid is cool as a cucumber. And you can say that about a lot of goaltenders, but I mean, Greg Brown said he looks sometimes like he's disinterested, and he's not. He's just that calm. So the two things that I took away today, guys, was Matt Davis used one word. If you guys remember, he said, I just try to breathe. And I'm not sure that Jacob Fowler does breathe. I think he just is comatose.
He's got great lung capacity and just holds his breath.
Nick, let me see if you think I'm off base here, and sometimes we're talking about slivers here. We're just talking about slivers. We're not talking about when we say something, we're not saying it in a way to disparage one team or the other. Both of these teams, correct.
Very much so.
Both of these teams have very good six-man units on defense. But neither one of these teams has a Zeev Bulliam or a Lane Hudson.
Or Kale McCarr.
Or Kale McCarr. It's fine. But, you know, and I'm not saying that you can't see these defensemen make that play, that kind of, well, we can't get it out of our zone, I'm just going to say screw it and take it myself. I'm not saying that these guys can't do that. I'm just saying it's much harder. It's not, they're not in that same league as, at least at this level yet, as those other two guys are on both of those rosters.
And I'll add to that, Paul, right? And this will connect the dots between actually you and Scott. That's how you get trapped into making a mistake, right? And that is putting players in a position where they feel like they have to be a one-man show. And again, it's not that they don't have the skill or the ability or that they haven't done it before, right? You don't...
Right.
And I think what makes this Frozen Four so unique is you've got the high-end offensive skill, you've got good goaltending, but I also think there's a really good mix also of good mobile offensive defensemen in this mix too, right? But let's not forget, these teams, Denver, I think especially, not that I'm trying to, you know, go to the other matchup, but I think they play a very sound six-man defensive structured game, right? And I think the area between the blue lines is why I feel like if you can essentially force players to go into that mode, that mental mode where I've got no passing options, I've got some ice in front of me, it's not great, but I got to take what I'm given. I can't force a play. I think this is where, you know, you talk about this in championship series or, you know, in situations like this in the Frozen Four. At some point, you know, the instincts, or shall we say, the you know, your intuition takes over sometimes, where the play up the left wall was there, it's not, and there's some frustrations that build. So you're trying to make something work that didn't. I'm describing, for those who don't know, the 2019 first round matchup between St. Cloud and AIC.
Right.
You know, AIC took away everything that St. Cloud wanted to do in that hockey game, and St. Cloud just kept trying to beat the dead horse all night long. And when they figured it out a little bit, what AIC was really trying to do, it was too late. So, again, to to kind of marry this all back together. No, this is, these are incredible student athletes that we're going to be watching. This has nothing to do with their individual abilities, more so to complement the amount of skill that both sides are going to be facing each other, and more so that that freedom to showcase that skill, to be able to be the highlight reel, is going to be it's going to be more difficult. So it's going to be who can be more mentally tough, who can, you know, not deviate from what works, you know, taking what's there instead of trying to force a play. So I do think you're onto something there, Paul. Again, we're not slighting anybody in particular.
No.
But it we just anticipate, and I think it's fair to say, I think we're all anticipating that it's, you know, what do you call it? You know, the unstoppable force versus the immovable object. Who gives way first? And that, to me, is what's going to determine the winners in each of our three.
And again, you know, we're talking about BC team that's 33-5-1. Michigan's record is probably at the bottom of this group at 23-14-3 in terms of, you know, the actual wins and losses. So we're not talking about teams that can't play or that are not well-rounded teams, because you know, you win as many games as these teams did. Again, it's not an
accident.
No. And I'm not saying it, again, just to make sure that people understand the skill and the specialness of Elaine Hudson and Azeev Bulyum, or even Sean Behrens.
Okay. Sub six, we like to say.
Whatever. You know, that's more of a credit to those guys' individual talents. That just plays to the advantage of those two schools, because they're just different players as opposed to the guys on Michigan and BC. They're just different.
Yep. Good point. Okay, I'm going to give you my NCAA Frozen Four hat trick tonight. Jesus. You guys can think about it, see if you want to join me in the hat trick. But three concepts that I think are going to be the difference maker on who carries that trophy around the rink on Saturday night. Number one, I think the goaltenders, as always, but I think two of them, to me, look like standouts. And not to say the other two can't pull it off in a one game. We've already talked about that, but boy, the difference between Jacob Fowler and Matt Davis and the other two. I'm sorry. I'm just going to call them the other two.
No, because you're not going to slight our boy Jake Barczewski from St. Louis. You're just not doing that.
Okay. And Mr. Caron. Can I call him Mr. Caron?
Matthew Caron at BU. Okay. Again, anyway, I have friends that go to a lot of these places.
Okay, so then you say it. But anyway, I'm trying to make my point here because I think there is that big of a difference in a one-game scenario where those two gentlemen that I mentioned first could actually steal a game. So that's one. Number two is, I really think these distractions, and you can say they're not, and they'll say they're not, but I think when you have this much high-level talent on one ice sheet, any kind of mental distraction, just any kind, can be the difference. And I'm worried that the two Boston schools have way too much media pressure on them, because everybody outside of us, I think, is anointing it a BC-BU national championship game, and maybe it will be. But I'm just saying, if that's already in the back of the heads of the media, the parents, the coaches, the players, you got to get past Thursday first. And how many times has David Carl told me, you got to win Thursday before you can talk about Saturday? And he's correct in the tournament. And I just don't see them talking that much about that. I think they're more talking about, boy, wouldn't it be cool if we had a one-mile stretch of Boston that was playing for a national championship? Wouldn't that be really cool? And I think the four-letter word from out east is going like, that would be really cool. We'd really like to sell that advertising. Anyway, so I think that's number two. And number three is, I think we all know that this is a game of adjustments. And I am convinced that the two coaches that are going to make the best adjustments are David Carl and Greg Brown. And the reason I say that is because David Carl has had to make adjustments. You saw him in the World Juniors. I asked him that today. I said, you know, is it good, bad, or indifferent that you know players on the other side? And then he said, I don't know. I don't know if it makes a difference. And Dunk played it. And then as we're walking through the hallway, he says, do you know Cutter Gauthier? He introduces me to him as we're walking by. I'm like, okay, I just brought this up, dude. Anyway, I thought that was kind of a hilarious line. So those are my hat tricks. You guys got your own, Paul?
I don't make predictions. You know me. I wait to see what happens with the games. Let's go. I'm actually kind of tired of talking. And let's go. Let's play the game.
Yeah, you cop out. Nick, I know you're not going to cop out.
No.
What are the three? What's the hat trick points that you're going to look for this weekend?
Goaltending, number one. I think, you know, that's undeniable from any side. You got to have good goaltending. You mentioned the two goaltenders that I would not disagree that would be the two goaltenders that, to me, are playing the best as we go into the tournament. Two, to me, is actually the depth forwards, the bottom six.
Fidget, Nick, fidget.
Fidget, I got to figure this out. This is getting annoying. Anyway, at the end of it, it's the bottom six for me in the forward group because, you know, we've talked about ad nauseum, the talent that's going to be on display over these next, you know, few games, but we forget to mention that, you know, there's an equal and an opposite bottom six that's going to be tasked, the line matchups to who's going to be, you know, paired up against like a Macklin Celebrini, who's going to be paired up against a Jack Devine or a McCade Webster, right? To me, when I think back to St. Cloud State's 2021 national championship run, the one thing that me and my podcast partner and Brett Larson talking to him at, you know, multiple times about it, that fourth line they had, it was Jared Cockrell, it was Joel Molinar, and it was Will Hammer. And how they embraced and they really sold that role of the fourth line, a shutdown type line that could score here and there, but they were a pest to play against. They played in the offensive zone, they cycled the puck well, and they won faceoffs. So to me, the bottom six in each lineup, that's a matchup I'm looking for. And then for me, I'm going to still stick with the third one is the neutral zone. I really feel like all of these teams in this tournament know how to turn and burn. They know how to play in transition. They can play fast. Whoever can utilize and maybe more so open up what's probably going to be a very crowded area of the ice and not be afraid to get a little bit, you know, of elbow grease involved and be able to chip it in, and more so not just chip it in, but to put the puck in areas where you can get in on the forecheck and be on the first touch. You get good solid support from your second forward in, and then again, activating your defenseman and also to keep that puck alive. That to me is where the difference makers are going to be. So goaltending, yes, but bottom six forwards trying to neutralize your opponent's top offensive weapons, frustrate them a little bit, maybe even play a little physical with them, you know, just try to throw them off their game a bit, right? We always talk about the game within a game. I think that's a bit overlooked sometimes. And then three, again, through the neutral zone, I just feel like that zone is going to determine so much and who's able to adapt or more so just persevere and how it sets up the forecheck and maybe more so how it shuts down the opponents and their inability to establish anything offensively just because they just don't have clean breakouts. Their passing starts to get a little bit, shall we say, off. They try to force plays. That to me is my hat trick.
Good stuff, Nick. I will say this. I am confident in this one. If it's BU, BC, it's going to be an exciting, really enjoyable championship game. If it's Denver and Michigan, it's going to be a really, really exciting championship game because you know what's on the line. 10 is on the line. I don't know if you guys heard my hashtag, but for Denver, it's time for 10. Anyway, I knew that would get Paul.
It's like he's brainstorming for the next like hot product line, like Sub 6. That sounds like a young like energy drink that you could sell at the gas station.
But yeah, well,
thanks, Nick. That's
yeah,
motivation. I'm all rights reserved for me. No, I'm kidding.
No, yeah, you are hit. Yeah,
okay. I mean, so Michigan, Denver, BC, BU. I think those are blockbusters. Okay, how about the other matchup? What if it's not those four?
Anybody? I don't really think it matters.
I mean, honestly, if you guys wanted me, I have Denver and BC in the national championship game. That were my two picks. I just feel like, again, the depth of Denver is going to overcome a BU squad despite the talent. BC, I think, will get the upper hand over Michigan. I still feel like that would be one heck of a hockey game because you have a recent national title winner with Denver. You've got Boston College with the talent and, you know, their resurgence and, you know, the national team development program. The opposing head coach in David Carl, who coached a lot of players on that squad in the World Juniors. So there's storylines aplenty, honestly. And to Paul's point, I think is I don't think it matters. I think whichever matchup, throw it in, you know, roll the dice, I think it's going to be good hockey. I just think that the four teams in St. Paul this year are that good. They're that talented. And I'm not sure the matchup matters. I think every single game is going to be, but you know, the possibilities will be good. But to your point, Scott, I know a certain sports enterprise that maybe calls the Sunshine State home sometimes would be salivating at an all Boston national championship game. And I do kind of feel like there would be some very good press for the game of college hockey if that happened, although I think for all of us in the room, we'd be a little disappointed, as would be our friend Michael Weissman if Denver couldn't make it. But I do feel like that'd be a nice marketing tool for college hockey if that were.
Yeah, totally going to agree with you on that one. I also think the uniqueness of what you just called, Mick, a BC, a Denver one, two New Balance schools, two very identical color combinations. It could really be an interesting matchup if those two do match up against each other, because Michigan clearly is blue and maize, and we know that, and it stands out like a sore thumb, and BU is clearly red and white, and that stands out like a sore thumb, but those other two, they're a couple shades apart, if that. Paul, final thoughts from you?
Well, I know that these things always get me in trouble, and I know it always makes you have to put out fires, despite what you tell me. I've been saying it for the last few months that I don't think anybody's better than BC. Does that mean I think they're going to win? Well, I mean, I think they're the best team. That doesn't mean necessarily that they're going to win.
Well, the one thing that I see with BC is, in addition to the outside noise, if you will, which they're trying to block out and obvious, they're coming. They've won 14 in a row, Paul. So you know how hard it is to carry a 14-game winning streak into a national tournament.
Yeah, but they just have to go 1-0 tomorrow. They don't have to worry about 15 games.
I know, but it's 14 in a row, man. And don't think people aren't telling them about it.
It's kind of both, right? I mean, first of all, knock on wood, right, for the broadcaster's jinx. But at the end of it, you almost wonder, right? You know, some of the teams that I feel like have better chances of going deep or the ones that face adversity, not to say that they haven't, right? When you win 14 in a row, you're obviously doing a lot of things right. But there also has been a lot of talk, and I'm going to go back to Denver on this, you know, winning in double overtime and then single overtime and doing it in ways, you heard it from the players, and in ways that they're not normally accustomed to, but still doing it in a single elimination type setting. That to me is a stronger case to be successful at this point in the season than someone that's coming in with a 14-game winning streak. Now, to Paul's credit, 100%, this is just one game. You're focusing on one game. You just got to go 1-0, right? Right. Coaches will talk about, we just got to win the next shift, win the period, you know, and then win the game, right? It's apparently it's that simple, right? So
yeah, of course.
Yeah, it's it's like we're searching for this winning formula, and it's just that simple. It's small biscuit, big basket, right? So yep. At the end of it, no, I don't think the players think about it as much when we get to this point in the season. I think everybody's focused on one thing. Give yourself a chance to get to Saturday and just kind of go from there. And more so, Scott and Paul, you got to have fun, right? As a player, as a coach.
Oh, yeah.
At the end of it, for some of these kids, granted, there's a lot of great talent here that's more than likely going on to the next level. But for some kids, it isn't. Right. So when you're in an NHL building, a hockey city, a hockey state that loves and embraces the game, it's going to be a great environment. Yeah, about that. So, yeah, sell out the Xcel Energy Center for a high school hockey tournament and then come back and talk with me, Paul. But at the end of it, right, for some of these, this may be their last experience playing the game of hockey at this level. And I'm excited to see, how some of these other players approach it and more so, how enjoyable that it's going to be for them just to be able to enjoy the spectacle, enjoy the pomp and circumstance. If there are players that will never lace up the skates again professionally or at any other level, this would be one hell of a way to go out. It's shaping up to be a great tournament.
Nick, I'm glad you brought that up because that was talked about a lot today. Fun. A lot of the people that I talked to said, boy, did you see BC? They were having a lot of fun. After that practice session, they left the ice very loose, very comfortable. So, yeah, I think that fun emphasis is definitely out there. I will tell everybody that if you want fun, the Frozen Fest is going on downtown St. Paul. And tomorrow, everything starts with a red carpet arrival. And if it's anything like it was in Boston, wow, what an experience that is. The players are just overwhelmed by their support groups and their bands. And that all starts at 1:30 Central Time tomorrow. So I'll be there. Nick, will you be there?
Unfortunately, no. I will be working
till the afternoon.
Yeah,
right?
I work until 2:30. And let's just say that I'll be making a beeline to St. Paul. What's interesting, and I don't know if you guys know this, but there's no set aside media parking for this event. It's not set aside. And wow. So for those who have been to St. Paul, even on a normal game day, know that it's hit or miss. And a lot of times it's the latter, it's the miss. So I hope to be there right around the 3 o'clock hour just so I can get in, get settled. I'm not expecting it to be that smooth. I'm probably going to be more getting probably out of the parking lot at 3:30. And then having a little bit of a cardio workout, getting to pick up the press badge and getting up to the press level for the puck drop. So it's going to be a close call.
That's good because somebody's got to keep Scott from jumping out of the press box onto the ice in a head first dive when one of his pom poms doesn't quite work out the way he wants it to. And, three minutes into the game, oh, my God, this game is over. It's 1-0. Ah!
No, I just texted that to you.
Oh, good thing, Paul, that the press box isn't like the Calgary Settled Dome where you have to walk the catwalk across. Well, you don't have to. That's the good news. Or it's not what the Maple Leaf Gardens, the old gardens that were kind of suspended above the ice rink. Yeah. St. Paul is a modern building, which I'm not sure what that would qualify in New York. What, 100 years old? Oh, no, that's only 20.
That's about close. That's
yeah. Close. No, it's actually a pretty nice press box. It's a big one. So there's plenty of room. Yeah. And that the good news is that the railing levels are high enough that I don't think we have to worry about Scott entering the playing surface from any level.
All right. We'll just keep the sharp objects away from him then too.
Nick, I will tell you that was talk of the building today. And some of the players said, hey, it's kind of cool. We don't have like the four posters that you find, the four posts, I should say, that you find in most buildings. Like it's a rectangle building where there's a post on each end. This is, immensely circular, right? Or oval?
Yeah, and you know the big thing with the X when it was designed, right? If you remember back to the Civic Center, which the XL Energy Center was built on that same footprint, right? The one thing about the Civic Center, and I got to play on that ice sheet. I got to watch some Minnesota Moose games, if any of you recall the old IHL.
Nice.
Oh yes, small tidbit there. There was an autograph session one of the games, and one of the players that I have an autograph on is Dave Hackstall. That's on a Minnesota Moose hat. How about that? Cool? Right, that it's pretty crazy, right? But it's the open concourse design, right? That was the
fidget Nick.
Fidgeting. Here we go. Okay. It was the open concourse design. You know, the Civic Center was much like the Met Center, where it felt like the Metrodome. It was just, there was no viewpoint from the concourses, and they really wanted to be able to open things up. And it was a big part of the design process for the X. And, you know, even if you don't have a seat, you can almost walk through any of the concourses, especially on the club level, and almost watch the game without having to really be sitting in your seat. So it's a fantastic venue. There's great viewing spots from anywhere in that building, especially where we're going to be very high up on the press box. It's very similar to Pittsburgh's building. They're what was the Console Energy Center. Now it's what, the PPG Paints Arena, I think.
Yeah, correct. Yep. We just call it the old Pittsburgh Civic Center. We don't really.
Pretty much. It's not the Mellon, but it's, you know, Civic Center.
It's the Metropolitan, the Met. In Washington.
Yeah.
It's still the same.
Yeah, and I just hope that, you know, I'm confident that the state of hockey will pack the building. You know, fans have traveled here, and more so the atmosphere when that building is packed. It's one of the best venues in all of hockey, so that I'm more excited for than anything.
Yeah, I think you're right on that. All right, Paul, take it away.
From the St. Louis Sports Commission Studios, hosts of the 2025 NCAA Frozen Four and ACHA National Championships, this has been College Hockey Coast to Coast, brought to you by Jesse Ray's Barbecue. 308 North Boulder Highway in Henderson, where our food can be summed up in one word: perfection. Liberty University. Strengthen your faith and your game at the premier ACHA M1 program on the East Coast at liberty.edu. Caesars Sportsbook app, a proud partner of the NHL. College Hockey Inc., your NCAA hockey resource. The Spaghetti Shack, classic Italian comfort food quickly, with two locations in Tempe and one in Pine Top. Lunch, dinner, or your next catered event at thespaghettishack.com. Caesars Entertainment Resorts and Casinos, where the action is, from the Atlantic to the Pacific and around the world. And by FedEx, delivery is made easy no matter where you are, the official delivery company of Icetime Hockey West. College Hockey Coast to Coast and all the Icetime Hockey West podcasts are live every week on the Podbean app, or for download on your favorite podcast platform by searching and subscribing to ITHSW Podcasts, all one word. It's ITHSW Podcasts, all one word. If you like what you hear, tell a friend or leave a positive review. College Hockey Coast to Coast from the St. Louis Sports Commission Studios is a part of the IcetimeHockeyWest.com network.
Very well done, my friend. We sail along 18 minutes over, but good conversation tonight. Enjoy it. I was Nick bringing it, Paul bringing it, and I'm just here for the ride.
Good, we'll say goodnight
to Roger Klein, the Peacemakers. Hello, new day. Good night, everybody.